Morning Gumbo. And this KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from the River City Bluegrass Festival, January 7th and 8th at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland, featuring Ricky Skaggs and Kentucky Thunder, Earl Scruggs, Rhonda Vincent and The Rage, Mike Marshall and Chris Teeley, Misty River, and many others. Tickets at Tickets West and more information at rivercitybluegrass.com. You are listening to KBOO Portland, heard at 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 FM in Hood River, and 100.7 FM in Corvallis and Albany. Stay tuned now for the KABU Morning News.
Good morning. This is the KABU Morning News for Tuesday, December 20th, 2005. I'm Becca Bartleson.
And I'm Brian Smith.
Coming up on this morning's news, the two activists arrested earlier this month on eco-terrorism charges were arraigned in federal court yesterday. Senator Barbara Boxer has become the first in the Senate to bring up the subject of impeachment. In Iraq, Sunni Arabs are challenging partial returns from last week's parliamentary elections. Portland area weather today, rainy, sometimes freezing. Temperatures 35 to 45. Tonight, low in the mid to upper 30s.
Two people arrested earlier this month on eco-terrorism charges were arraigned in federal court yesterday. Kevin Tubbs faces up to 20 years if convicted of a 1998 arson at a Washington State Agricultural Department of office in Olympia. And Chelsea Gerlach faces up to 300 years, and that's if she is convicted, of toppling a Bonneville Power Administration transmission tower in 1999. Both pleaded not guilty. Their attorney said they would ask for the two to be released because there's a lack of hard evidence. They say the only evidence the government has provided so is the statements of two informants who took part in the attacks. But a federal prosecutor replied he would begin providing more than 1,000 pages of evidence by the end of the week.
Oregon's Certificate of Initial Mastery, CIM, is on the way to an ignominious exit. The CIM's days are numbered in Salem. State School Superintendent Susan Castillo intends to dump it and the Companion Certificate of Advanced Mastery, CAM, because they are not required by most schools, colleges, or employers. The CIM and CAM are designed to signal that students have met state standards, developed a plan for the next step beyond high school, and participated in career-related learning. Supporters of the credentials worry that scrapping them without a clear replacement could undermine years of hard work. Opponents have been saying right from the get-go that the certificates held dubious academic credibility. Only about one-third of graduating seniors earn a CIM statewide. This from the Oregonian.
The State Land Use Agency is seeking applications for an at-large vacancy on the Citizens Involvement Advisory Committee, according to the Salem Statesman Journal. The 8 volunteer members of the committee advise the State Land Conservation and Development Commission and local governments about citizen involvement in land use planning. The committee does not set land use policy or review local land use actions. Committee members must be available for bi-monthly meetings in Salem. Applications require a resume, 4 letters of recommendation or references, and answers to 4 questions.
Under a proposed initiative measure that's been filed for next year's statewide ballot, every Oregonian would receive medical insurance by the year 2008. The measure would rekindle the debate over universal health care coverage at a time when the number of Oregonians who lack health insurance has climbed to more than 600,000. The new measure says only that the 2007 legislature must create the framework for a universal health care system, and that one must be in place by November 2008. No state currently has a universal health care system. The co-sponsors of the measure say they have been meeting with various labor and health care groups to enlist their support for a campaign to gather signatures to place the measure to a statewide vote. One of the state's leading health care activist groups, Oregonians for Health Security, said it's not endorsing the universal health care plan just yet. But spokeswoman Maribeth Healy said she finds it heartening that it's one of several health care initiatives that have been filed for next year's ballot.
A federal judge has ruled that former superintendent of the Northwest Regional Education Service District can ask a jury to hear his defamation and civil rights lawsuit against the district and its board members. Todd Herberg claims district leaders violated his due process rights and defamed him by publishing false information about his spending habits while he was superintendent. U.S. Magistrate Janice Stewart rejected the district's motion to dismiss the case. Stewart cited several instances where district officials released inaccurate information, and district officials incorrectly told auditors the district used Internal Revenue Service guidelines for travel expenses. And in a news release, district leaders incorrectly called an accounting firm's review of Herberg's expense an audit. The district now can proceed toward trial or seek to settle the case.
The House of Representatives voted yesterday to open the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge for oil drilling. FSRN's Greg Gorman reports from Washington, D.C.
U.S. representatives voted early Monday morning for a provision to allow drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge as part of a larger defense bill. The ANWR provision was attached to a defense bill that will allocate $29 billion to Hurricane Katrina relief and provide funds for the prevention of avian flu, in addition to billions of dollars for the war in Iraq. The bill passed 308-106. According to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, oil from ANWR would only reduce the share of oil imports by 2% and would not enter the U.S. market for almost 10 years after drilling begins. Some House Democrats charged that the ANWR language was included in a critical defense bill so that it will be hard for them to vote against it, especially while the country is at war in Iraq. For Free Speech Radio News in Washington, D.C., I'm Gregory Gorman.
Walmart is the target of a criminal investigation over how it handled merchandise that is classified as hazardous waste, the company announced yesterday. The world's largest retailer said in a regulatory finding that the investigation centers on the company's transport of hazardous materials from stores in California to a return center in Las Vegas. The company said its practice is to remove hazardous materials to return centers, then take the materials to sites approved for hazardous waste disposal. The materials include a wide range of products, anything from damaged aerosol cans to paint. Walmart spokesman Sarah Clark said, "The government did not challenge the manner in which we disposed of hazardous waste material once it arrived in the return center, but rather the transport of the material to the return center." Federal prosecutors say the company potentially violated the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act. The act requires hazardous waste to be shipped straight to a disposal site via a certified hazardous waste carrier.
New York transit workers walked off the job yesterday, the first time in 25 years, leaving millions of people stranded. This after last-ditch talks between the Transport Workers Union, TWU, and the state-run Metropolitan Transportation Authority, MTA, collapsed shortly before the strike deadline, this from Reuters. About 3 hours later, the union called the strike, shutting down the entire subway and bus system, which carries 7 million daily passengers. The last such strike, in 1980, lasted 11 days, and this one, too, could drag on for some time. Union and management have been battling over wage hikes, health care, and pension costs and retirement age. The union disputed the MTA's contention that cutbacks in benefits are necessary, noting the agency has a $1 billion surplus.
A Senate vote on deficit reduction bill looks to be so tight that Vice President Dick Cheney is returning from Pakistan to be the tiebreaker for saving one of the Bush administration's top priorities. The showdown vote is pending, which could cut some federal benefits and trim budget deficits by $40 billion through the end of the decade. Whether the vice president is needed for the budget vote may rest with Nebraska Senator Ben Nelson. Nelson was one of the two Democrats to vote for the bill when it passed 52-47 last month. Now that the bill is returning from the House-Senate negotiations with stiffer cuts to the Medicaid health care program for the poor and disabled than the milder state passed version, Nelson is weighing a nay vote, and he has scheduled an announcement for today. Senate Republicans were also waging a Christmas week battle with Democrats and GOP moderates over allowing oil drilling in Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. The drilling plan is attached to a wartime Pentagon spending bill that also included $29 billion in new aid for Gulf Coast hurricane victims, and as well as new money for border security and winter heating subsidies in an attempt to crack a threatened filibuster.
Senator Barbara Boxer has become the first in the Senate to raise consideration of impeachment of President George Bush for authorizing spying on Americans without warrants, according to Ross Story. Boxer isn't the first Congress member today to float the word. Earlier today, Representative John Lewis said Bush should be impeached if he broke the law on the spying program. Boxer asked four presidential scholars for their opinion on former White House counsel John Dean's statement that President Bush admitted to an impeachable offense when he said he authorized the National Security Agency to spy on Americans without getting a warrant from a judge. Boxer said, "I take very seriously Mr. Dean's comments, as I view him to be an expert on presidential abuse of power. I am expecting a full airing of this matter by the Senate in the very near future."
House Judiciary Committee Democrats, spearheaded by Congressman John Conyers, are set to release possibly the sharpest congressional critique to date surrounding Iraq, Ross Story has learned. The report, titled The Constitution in Crisis, The Downing Street Minutes and Deception, Manipulation, Torture, Retribution, and Cover-ups in the Iraq War, is slotted to be made available to the public today. According to Democratic aides, the report will focus on alleged manipulation of pre-war intelligence by the White House, specifically covering such topics as the Downing Street Minutes, as well as the White House position on the Geneva Conventions and international law. The ranking Democrat on the Judiciary Committee, Conyers, had previously published or pushed for an inquiry into the Downing Street Minutes. The document is the official minutes of a 2002 meeting among British Prime Minister Tony Blair, members of the British intelligence MI6, as well as Bush administration advisors. Most notably, the minutes included a comment from British intelligence director Richard Dearlove, who was quoted in a secret meeting before the war as saying, "Intelligence and facts are being fixed around the policy." Public outcry resulted in a resolution of inquiry filing with close to half a million citizen signatures, as well as a hearing chaired by Conyers and attended by other Democratic members on the Judiciary Committee. Republican members of the committee would neither attend nor support efforts to investigate the documents. Ross Story has copies of all the Downing Street documents and other pre-war British correspondence documents there. Those pushing for inquiries into the Downing Street minutes maintain a website at afterdowningstreet.org.
The American Civil Liberties Union has accused the FBI of misusing terrorism investigators to monitor some domestic political organizations. This despite apparently disparate views within the FBI whether some group supported or committed violent acts, the Associated Press is set to reveal, according to the ACLU. Lawyers for the ACLU described the disputed use of terrorism resources as the latest illustration of intensified surveillance aimed towards Americans. The ACLU said it will publish the FBI reports it obtained on its website today. In one case, government records show the FBI launched a terrorism investigation of the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, despite acknowledgement by one FBI official that the FBI does not consider PETA a terrorist organization. The ACLU said the FBI documents also suggest that federal terrorism investigators infiltrated the Washington-based American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. One document sent to an FBI counterterrorism unit in Los Angeles describes a list of attendees from the group at a conference to protest sanctions against Iraq in May 2002. Other FBI documents obtained by the ACLU describe efforts in May 2001 by Greenpeace and the Los Angeles-based Catholic Workers Group to disrupt missile tests in California. The FBI said the Catholic Workers Groups advocate a communist distribution of resources.
U.S. Representative John Lewis said yesterday in a radio interview that President Bush should be impeached if he broke the law in authorizing spying on Americans. The Democratic senator from Georgia told WAOK-AM he would sign a bill of impeachment if one was drawn up and that the House of Representatives should consider such a move. Lewis is among several Democrats who have voiced discontent with Sunday night's television speech where Bush asked Americans to continue the support to support the war on Iraq. "It's a very serious charge, but he violated the law," said Lewis, a former civil rights leader. "The president should abide by the law, and he deliberately and systematically violated the law. He is not a king. He is a president."
A federal judge considering whether intelligent design belongs in public school biology classes could deal a blow to the movement critical of the theory of evolution. U.S. District Judge John E. Jones III was expected to rule today on whether the Dover Area School Board violated the Constitution when it required its biology curriculum to include so-called intelligent design. The school board policy was believed to have been the first of its kind in the nation. Lawyers for the school board have said they hope Jones will limit the scope of his ruling to the board's motivation for adopting that curriculum change. But attorneys for eight families suing to have intelligent design removed from the science curriculum hope Jones will rule more broadly on the scientific validity of intelligence design. The board's attorney members said members sought to improve science education by exposing students to alternatives to the established theory of evolution. The plaintiffs argued that intelligent design amounts to a secular repackaging of creationism, which the courts have already ruled cannot be taught in public schools. The case is among at least a handful that have focused new attention on the teaching of evolution in the nation's schools.
A Christian student group is fighting Cal State San Bernardino's refusal to let their group organize on campus. School officials say the Christian Student Association would discriminate against non-Christians and homosexuals. State law prevents student groups at public universities from excluding people based on religion or sexual orientation. But the group's leader, Ryan Sorba, accuses the university of discriminating against Christians, and now several Christian organizations are campaigning to force the school to approve the club. Similar controversies are playing out on other California campuses. A group called the Alliance Defense Fund is suing campuses in Long Beach and San Diego, alleging that the Cal State system-wide policy forces students to abandon their Christian beliefs if they want benefits that other organizations get.
Hundreds of people converged yesterday on the South Los Angeles neighborhood to say goodbye to Stanley Tookie Williams. Williams, clad in a gray suit, lay in an open coffin at the house of Winston Mortuary as people quietly filed by with their heads bowed. A line of 200 stretched out of the door shortly after the six-hour viewing began in mid-afternoon. More than an hour later, the line had dissipated, but people were still streaming through. Williams, whose execution was carried out over the protest of supporters who included celebrities and civil rights activists, spent his last years on California's death row, renouncing gang violence and writing several children's books warning of the dangers of gangs. A crowd lingering outside the mortuary carried signs and handed out flyers proclaiming his innocence. Tookie Williams' funeral will be held today in Los Angeles. Organizers said those expected to attend include the Reverend Jesse Jackson, Nation of Islam minister Louis Farrakhan, and hip-hop artist Snoop Dogg.
Last week, MSNBC host Tucker Carlson let loose with a string of anti-Canada rants, describing Canada as a stalker and a retarded cousin, and other pundits recently asked if Canadians weren't getting a little too big for their britches, this from the Toronto Star. The current spate of Canada bashing by right-wing media commentators in the United States began after Prime Minister Paul Martin's complaint about lumber penalties and U.S. policy on climate change. His remarks prompted an unusual rebuke last week from the American ambassador. The nonprofit group Media Matters for America has been monitoring the trend of attacks on Canada and say it's disturbing. Douglas MacKinnon, a press secretary to former Republican Senator Bob Dole, also recently accused Canada of harboring terrorists and asked, "Can Canada really be considered our friend anymore?" U.S. Ambassador David Wilkins warned Martin last week to tone down anti-American jabs or risk hurting bilateral relations. But Martin was unrepentant, saying he would not be dictated to by the United States.
As President George W. Bush urges the Senate to approve a measure to extend expiring sections of the USA Patriot Act, one case of a Massachusetts college student has some questioning the limits of government surveillance. FSRN's Catherine Comp has more.
History professors at the University of Massachusetts Dartmouth have come forward with the case of a student who was visited by federal agents after requesting a book from the school's library system. The senior, who's keeping his identity secret for fear of repercussions, requested Mao Zedong's The Little Red Book for a class he was taking on fascism and totalitarianism. Professor Brian Williams says the student was later visited at his parents' house by two Homeland Security agents.
And it's something that a 21-year-old could find daunting, you know, anybody would actually, to have two federal agents announce that they've been monitoring what you've been reading and want to know who you are and why you've been selecting these sort of books. So it sends exactly the wrong message to our students, who we encourage to be creative in their research.
The agents allegedly told the student that he drew suspicion because the book was on a watch list and he had spent significant time abroad. For FSRN, I'm Catherine Kamp.
California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has revoked from his hometown the right to use his name on a stadium, Spiegel Online reports. The move comes after groups propose the venue instead be named after Tookie Williams, the ex-gang member and Nobel nominee executed by California last week. Arnold's refusal to grant Williams clemency prompted international outrage, particularly in his native Austria. Schwarzenegger is reportedly withdrawing rights to his name preemptively to avoid further embarrassment should the group succeed either in naming the stadium after Williams or in simply removing Schwarzenegger's name. Media have reported already, however, that counselors had already removed Arnold's name from the planned stadium last week.
Sunni Arabs today challenged partial returns from Iraq's parliamentary elections, calling them a falsification of the will of the people and saying evidence of fraud was abundant. Iraq's Election Commission, meanwhile, said final results won't be ready before early January instead of late December, in order to complete the investigation into various complaints. Commission officials say more than 1,000 complaints have been received. Sunni Arab officials suggested Iraq's security and stability were at stake if their complaints about the December 15th vote were not addressed. Officials concentrated their protests on results from the Baghdad province. Election officials said the United Iraqi Alliance, a Shiite party, took about 59% of the vote from 89% of ballot boxes counted in Baghdad province. The Sunni Arab Iraqi Accordance Front received about 19%, and the Iraqi National List, headed by U.S.-backed Iyad Alawi, got about 14%. Experts say a likely outcome to the political process will be a Kurdish-Shiite alliance with token Sunni participation.
The British-educated Iraqi microbiologist known as Dr. Germ is among two dozen senior Ba'athist prisoners who have been freed after more than 2.5 years in U.S. detention, according to the London Times. Although the demands of those holding the British hostage Norman Kember and three other peace activists include prisoner releases, coalition officials insisted that the decision to free Rahib Taha and other detainees had nothing to do with the abductions. Huda Amash, the U.S.-trained scientist nicknamed Chemical Sally, or Miss Anthrax, has also been released. She and Dr. Taha were both high-ranking members of Saddam Hussein's party and had been accused of being central figures in his biological weapons program. Dr. Taha was even named in the dossier on Iraq's alleged weapons of mass destruction that the British government released in September of 2002 to make the case for war. Other high-value detainees released without charge from prison include Humam Abda al-Kahalik, the former Minister of Higher Education and Scientific Research. Like Dr. Amash, he featured in the 55 most wanted decks of cards released by the U.S. military during the 2003 invasion. The U.S. military refused to confirm the identities of the freed prisoners, but Iraqi officials, lawyers, and relatives also named Hossam Mohammed Amin, head of the Weapons Inspections Directorate, and Asil Tabra in Iraq Olympic Committee apartheid.
India has been the focus of medical research since the time when sunburned men with pith helmets and degrees from prestigious European medical schools came to catalog tropical illnesses. Multinational corporations are taking advantage of India's educated workforce and deep poverty to turn South Asia into the world's largest clinical testing petri dish. For decades, pharmaceutical research in India didn't rely on clinical testing. Scientists mostly reversed engineered drugs already developed in other countries. But in March, everything changed when India submitted to pressure from the World Trade Organization to stop the practice and implement rules that prohibit local companies from creating generic versions of patented drugs. Now pharmaceutical companies can rest assured they won't lose profits to a domestic market. India is suddenly a profitable location for performing the expensive tests required for Food and Drug Administration clearance of any drug. Though it is still too soon to tell how much the legislature change has boosted drug development, observers say the number of studies conducted by multinational drug companies has sharply increased since March. Given the rising cost of drug research in the United States and Europe, more and more drug companies are conducting clinical trials trials in developing countries where government oversight is more lax and research can be done for a fraction of the cost.
South America's leftward tilt has gained momentum with the likely victory of Bolivian presidential candidate Evo Morales. Morales is the cocoa farming India who calls himself Washington's nightmare. Morales' election is all but assured after his wide margin in Sunday's voting. A new generation of South American leaders are expanding economic alliances, making energy deals, planning new roads, and talking about a resurgent South America that delivers economic progress for its people with little help from Washington. Morales has a sharper learning curve than Brazil's Lula da Silva and Argentina's Nestor Kirchner. Kirchner announced early payoffs plans this month for their International Monetary Fund debt, saving billions of dollars in interest and restoring no small amount of national pride. Morales is counting on help from Venezuela's President Hugo Chavez, who reached Morales by phone at his family home in the cocoa-growing region of Cochabamba and told him he would share the good news of his victory with Cuban leader Fidel Castro.
Venezuela has given the world's biggest oil company, ExxonMobil, until the end of the year to enter a joint venture with the state. Failure to do so will almost certainly result in Exxon losing its oil field concessions in the country. Venezuela's socialist government has now signed new agreements with almost all foreign petroleum companies. After months of pressure from left-wing leader Hugo Chavez, most foreign oil firms working there have caved in. They have agreed to hand over a controlling stake of their oil interests to the Venezuelan state. This means that Venezuela, which has the world's largest petroleum reserves, now calls the shots in what the foreign guests can and cannot do. In addition, the companies which have signed the new contracts, such as Chevron, BP, Shell, and Total, will in the future be presented with much higher tax bills by the government. But Venezuela says it is only fair that the foreigners are made to pay up as they got away and lightly in the past. Much of the oil revenue in Venezuela goes into social projects in shanty towns and poor rural areas. But the U.S. oil giant ExxonMobil is digging in its heels and is so far refusing to agree to the terms of the new deal.
Demonstrations broke out across Iraq, and the oil minister threatened to resign Monday after the government raised the price of gasoline and cooking fuel by up to 9 times. The cabinet raised the prices of gasoline, diesel, kerosene, and cooking gas on Sunday to curb a growing black market, oil ministry spokesman Asim Jahad said. The price of locally produced gasoline was raised about sevenfold. In Amara, 180 miles southeast of Baghdad, police fired into the air to disperse hundreds of protesters gathered in front of the provincial government headquarters. The demonstrators, however, did not leave, and some scuffled with police. Protesters also briefly blocked the main road between Amara, Basra, and Baghdad. Drivers blocked roads and burned tires near fuel stations in the southern city of Basra, and hundreds of Iraqis demonstrated outside the governor's headquarters to protest the price increase. In Tikrit, 80 miles north of Baghdad, about 500 people demonstrated against the price hikes, giving a letter of protest to the city council to hand over the cabinet ministers. The current government has continued Saddam Hussein's policy of subsidizing fuel prices. The subsidies, which provide low gasoline and heating fuel prices to Iraqis, have been attacked by financial institutions as a crippling burden when the country is trying to create a free market economy. And this has been the KBOO Morning News for Tuesday, December 20th, 2005. Chris Andre edited the news. KBOO Newsroom volunteers and reporters produced and edited the tape. Kathleen Stevenson is the AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Becca Bartleson.
Portland area weather today, rainy, sometimes freezing, temperatures 35 to 45, and tonight low in the mid to upper 30s. Coming up later this morning on KBOO, at 7:30, Abe Proctor hosts Talk Radio. The topic will be the president's authorization to spy on Americans. At 9 on Between the Cover, it's a special one-hour interview with David McCullough, author of 1776, an insightful look at the pivotal year in American history. At 10, Michelle Schroeder Fletcher interviews Janet Roberts about her book, 34 Million Friends of the Women of the World, a book about women working for peace. At 10:30, on stage and studio, host D. May Roberts interviews actress and comedian Margaret Cho. And at 11, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. Oh, and right now we have Liam Delta Engineering. Thanks for listening. We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland, 100.7 FM Corvallis on translator K264AA, 91.9 FM in Hood River on translator K220HR. And be sure to join us for the KBOO Evening News at 5 p.m. Remember to take a look at the KBOO website, all new, all better. And but wait, there's more. If you have your most of your marbles, come and play. The newsroom always needs fresh blood. To volunteer, call Kathleen Stevenson at 503-231-8032, extension 202. Thanks for listening.
And this is the KBOO Community Calendar for Tuesday, 12/13/2005. A novel approach to holiday gift-giving is being offered by the Portland Mercury. Last Thursday, they started their annual online charity gift auction. Log on to their website, portlandmercury.com, read the descriptions of each gift, and select the gift you desire, and